Again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. The best way to support Gopher football monetarily is to join the Goal Line Club, and you can do that at goalineclub.org.
You certainly can, and the nice thing that's coming for Goal Line Club members is the luncheons, one of Luke's favorite activities, are coming back. What can you tell us about that, Luke?
Well, you know, I really enjoy a luncheon because, one, Ryan, there's lunch. But then number two, there will be speakers and a chance to, you know, fraternize with whether it's coaches that might be there or alternatively just Gopher fans and people that share that passion for Gopher football. So make sure that you keep an eye on goalineclub.org and also join there to become a member today. And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to, ladies and gentlemen, it finally happened. PJ Fleck won decisively at home in a non-conference game for the first time since I was 4 years old in 2018 as the Gophers absolutely decimate, eviscerate, choose your adjective wisely in a 38-0 route from the word go, I think is the best way we can use to describe that. But no one's here to listen to me. No one's here to listen to Luke. If I've learned anything about this breakdown podcast, it's to listen to my favorite second cousin, one of my favorite people out there in the football world.
That you've never met, by the way. That you've never met in person.
And he won't turn on his camera, so he won't let me see what he looks like. Derek, we're incredibly glad to have you for another season. How are things with you today?
I'm doing very well, guys. I really appreciate you having me back. This is a lot of fun, and it's good to have college football with us again. And I would just start by saying it's nice to see the Gophers go more than three or four plays deep into the playbook in a non-conference game, and I think it paid off for them.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch. And Ryan, I think you nailed it from the get go. It really wasn't close. But yeah, it was just really fun to have college football back. Beautiful, really a beautiful night for college football. I know both of you were able to be there in person, and I covered it from home per usual with two kids and a very busy wife last evening. But yeah, it was really fun to have the game on. This was the first time I felt like my son actually understood football at 3 years old. So that's a unique facet to get into. So Ryan, he has all sorts of questions for you the next time we see you in the grocery store, buddy.
I can't wait for him to then ignore me because I'm a big, scary guy, of which Luke tells me I'm bigger than a former Big Ten offensive lineman and Derek Burns.
You may never know that.
We can get into that at the end of the episode. The only thing else I would note before we get into this is right now, Gopher Illustrated, Luke, it is the best deal you're going to see all year. It is 75% off an annual VIP membership, which that's a $90 savings. Folks, that is like $2 a month. And the beautiful part about it is you're like, well, okay, I'll take advantage of this now. I'll pay like $20 for an entire year of GI, and then I'll think about it when I come to renew. Well, I would remind you that once you get off the promotional period, you then get Paramount Plus, which sources tell Luke, sources tell Derek, and sources tell myself that Paramount Plus is what the Big Ten is going to be streaming on for some Big Ten football and Big Ten basketball games starting here in the very near future, maybe when your promotional period comes to an end. So as we're recording this on Friday, with the Gophers playing on Thursday, that means the entire Gopher football staff is out on the road as we speak, recruiting, including potentially the head coach. I've got the names, the whereabouts of all the Gopher coaches, where they're at tonight on Gopher Illustrated. So if you have ever thought about joining and you thought to yourself, so I'm just going to wait for this great deal, this is our Labor Day sale. This is the best sale. It is literally, figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally 75% off, savings of more than $80. Check it out. It's all over my Twitter. It's all over GI. We'd love to have you.
All right. So let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense, and really from the get-go, they set the tone. Anybody surprised that they ran two consecutive pass plays in a row? That really
I talked about it in my five takeaways, Luke. Yeah. That was like the perfect way to start the Kirk Soraka era was just like an RPO slant, which, by the way, did you, Derek, did you see Tanner actually look off? He was looking to Michael Brown Stevens, and he came back inside to Chris Ottman Bell. But Luke, to your point, I mean, two consecutive, there was actually a running thread on GI about what's the first play. And I agreed with everybody else that it was going to be the Jerry Kill special run up the middle. And look at Kirk Soraka getting a little fancy on his boys.
Yeah, it seemed to be the strategy for New Mexico State on defense. Well, curiously, they went even box on a lot of running down and distances rather than loading the box. And so that what that tells us is they definitely didn't want to give up a lot of home runs in the passing game. And you could see by the way they were playing their safeties deep, they weren't going to allow that. But of course, what they did is just open up huge gaps in the zone in the middle of the field, really all game long, that if Tanner was given the time for those routes to develop, there were guys open over the middle of the field deep on those deep crossers all game long. And so that's what they started with. And, you know, they went back to that several times throughout the game.
All right. But I do think we have to make sure. I know I wanted to touch on that, but we have to talk. I think the big thing on offense was just the return of Mo Ibrahim and Trayson Potts. The fact that they were back and basically looked healthy and like mere images of what we remember, one, is just so enlightening as a Gopher fan. And it's so encouraging knowing going into the season, you know, you lost two guys to the transfer portal, but you brought back your top two running backs from last year and they look to be healthy. That just sits really well, Ryan.
I think that's almost got to be your biggest takeaway from that. Again, it's tough to take away a lot from New Mexico State being an atrocious team and Minnesota being an actual legitimate Big Ten team. But Derek and I were texting about it earlier today. I thought he looked that way in the spring. I thought he looked that way in fall camp, but you never really know until the lights come on and the adrenaline starts flowing. Mo Ibrahim looked like as good as we've seen Mo Ibrahim look. Now, he certainly had some running lanes to go through, but I mentioned it in the GIF rewind. It was just like a nondescript play, I think, late in the first quarter where he takes a handoff and he immediately has a guy in his face who was a free runner. He just, as he's taking the handoff, eludes that guy and gets 8 yards. It was like, I can't understate how important Mo Ibrahim is to this offense. Number one, because he's an exceptional player. I think by the end of the season, I think we're going to be discussing should they retire Mo Ibrahim's number, which I think he's going to have a legitimate argument for. But his ability to keep Minnesota ahead of schedule, and I had all the Pro Football Focus grades and snaps and stuff already up on GI. That's where 96 of his 132 yards were after contact. He had 12 first down runs, which is incredible on like 20-something attempts, low 20s. But Derek, I thought, you never know with a guy off an Achilles injury, especially a running back. But to me, Mo looked like Mo. Now, you're the one that everybody pays the big money to listen to. What did you think of Mo's night?
Yeah, we did share some text this morning, and I know this will sound like full-on homerism, but I was really surprised. Despite the fact that we know how good Mo is and can be, I was surprised. We know that historically Mo has great vision, maybe the best vision of any running back I've ever seen in a Gopher uniform. We also know he's a tough runner. Like you mentioned, those yards after contact, he tends to grind it out. His cuts, you know, in the game on Thursday night, they might have looked better than what he looked like before the injury. Now, with the caveat that it's New Mexico State, with the caveat that it's only 1 week, it's overreaction week. You know, we'll have to pull ourselves back a few times when we analyze here. But it was something to behold. He looked really good, possibly as good as he's ever looked.
All right, so just some quick stats here from the Gophers before we get into the further play. But as a team on the day, they put up 485 yards. They had 31 first downs. Maybe more importantly, they had passing wise, they were pretty efficient with an 8.2 yards per pass, something that we didn't really see a lot of lengthy passes last year. 297 yards on the ground, 5.2 yards, and then zero turnovers, Ryan. So let's maybe transition to that passing game, talk a little bit about this. A number of folks got in on the night. Tanner Morgan was 13 of 19 for 174 yards, but we also saw Kramer and Ethan Aliakmanis. So what was your perception of the passing game yesterday?
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Treyson Potts looked what I remember Treyson Potts looking like in that 2-3-4 game stretch that he had after Mo went down before he had that that injury. And again, to have them both healthy, to me, they rival Braylon Allen and Chez Malusi as the top Big Ten West running back duo, which is going to be really good for this offense. But passing wise, Derek, I think the best way to put it is, they look like they knew what they wanted to do and they could do it when they wanted to do it. Like in the Mike Sanford era, it was thinking about what are these route concepts? Why are they running what they're running? And I'm watching the routes as they're developing, and Minnesota only threw it 19 times with Tanner Morgan on the day. But when they wanted to pass, they could pass more times than not.
It looked, I would use the word comfortable. I don't know that Tanner just looked incredibly comfortable, as you mentioned, on a couple specific passes, looking off his first read on one of them, at least on his fourth read, you know, hitting his fourth read on a play. And it looked, the game looked incredibly slow for him. And that's a good thing. You know, things that just slowed down.
Times in the last 2 years where it just, he gets jittery.
Yes.
Gets happy feet.
Specifically with pressure, right? And a couple times he actually stepped up and made throws in that pressure. He looked comfortable.
To your point, Luke, and to that, and the one I think Derek's about to make as well, that was as comfortable as I've seen Tanner maneuver around things in his face. And he didn't get flustered. I mean, there was even the boot action where he found Nick Haller up for his first career catch, where he wants to hit Brevin in the flat, but the play side linebacker went with Brevin. And he's able to position his feet to a spot where he can get the ball to Nick with pressure in his face with a giant defensive lineman, and he's able to get that ball off. I just think that he was comfortable, he was confident, and now we'll see how it – again, I would anticipate it's going to look that way against Western Illinois, but if there was going to be a way you wanted Tanner Morgan to kind of start off his season, him looking comfortable, confident is exactly what you wanted to see there.
Yeah, and I do recall the boot play, which I was going to bring up specifically, that you just touched on, for many facets. You know, he's out of the pocket, he looks smooth, he has someone bearing down on him, he knows he's going to take a hit, but he still stays in there and stayed poised and was able to find a wide open tight end, you know, which is his third or fourth read. And that was good to see. But, you know, even the number of times in the pocket, being able to look off his first or second and hit the third receiver. And again, there were guys wide open. We have to be fair about that. The coverage was pressed downfield, which opened up some big gaps. But I would agree. The number of times we saw those long developing slow routes last year, and Tanner did not look poised at times and looked jittery and didn't want to necessarily wait for those to open up. And many times they didn't open up, and he got happy feet. So it was good to see. And you know, it was one of those games where you look at the stat line, nothing jumps out to you. But if you're watching the game play by play, you know, again, he looked like he was a sixth year QB, but back in, to me, under a scheme and a coaching staff that has him in positions to be successful on each play.
I never really want to argue with you, but I think something does jump out on the stats to me. And that's that there are a number of tight ends that actually caught passes. This is something we didn't see in 2019. We didn't see it a lot last year, but Brevin Spanford with two catches, Nick Caller up with one catch, Jamison Gears with two catches. Come on, you guys. That's a huge diversion from
And they even, when it was the normal offense, we saw them check down to the running back twice, and good things happened.
Yes.
And a screen. And we saw a screen pass. That's unusual.
Okay, tunnel screen actions, one to Dalen Wright, one to Lameke Brockington for his first career catch. Yeah. I mean, I also learned that on the Chris Ottman Bell play in the back of the end zone, which I thought was very almost reminiscent of the Tyler Johnson play back in 2019 in the Outback Bowl, that I was a little confused in real time about why it didn't count. Now, I could tell you the people of Twitter and everybody who had the benefit of having Mike Pereira. Yeah, you have him telling you what's going on. We have nothing in the press box. So that's where I could see the toe come down, and I was like, well, yeah, it's going to be a touchdown. And then it's ruled nothing. And I learned that even if your toe gets down, if your then heel comes down, the heel negates the toe.
Yes.
But the toe does not negate the heel, which I learn something every time I go watch football.
The example that I always, when this was first explained to me, is that, you know, if you're diving out of bounds a la Chris Carter, or better yet, Max Williams in that Iowa game where he dragged and got that toe down, that counts because as you're going out,
your heel never hits the ground.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yep. So that it's the toe tapping rule, which actually makes sense. Like fundamentally makes sense that you had to get some part in bounds, but you have to get all of 1 foot in bounds if your heel is going to hit. So,
you know, we've been recording this, doing this for 5 or 6 years. And I think this is the first time I've ever said this, that's a dumb rule. I don't understand. I get what they're saying. You need 1 foot down, but to me, if a part of your foot comes down inbounds first and the other part comes down out of bounds second, that's a catch. For example, if his heel had hit first out of bounds and then his toe had come down inbounds, I could see that not being a catch. It was explained well to Ryan's point. And you, what you just pointed out, Luke, they explained it well. That is the rule, that if you drag your foot going down to the ground, it's a catch. But if you come down with one part of your foot inbounds first and out, it's technically not a catch. That is the rule. I just don't understand why that's the rule. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. Well, it, that's the rule. And ultimately, I agree with you. I think if you get your foot in, it should count. But again, the awareness and Ottman Bell, his ability to kind of contort and move his body in space to try and actually get inbounds, still impressive, even though it didn't count as a touchdown.
Yeah, if you notice, he's taught to drop his feet. When you're in the back of the end zone, you go out for the ball. You're taught to drop your feet below you or in front of you with your toes first. So he did it right. It just happened to be a little bit too close to the end line. So he... you know, technically pulled it off, but was just a little too close to the back.
Yeah. The other thing I would note with the passing game is, or just in general with the offense, they ran 82 plays, or they had 82 snaps, I should say. And it was a game that was never in doubt. So that's where, when I do the snap counts on Gopher Illustrated, it's like, I wouldn't be putting a ton into it in terms of like Michael Brown Stevens playing like 50% of the snaps versus, say Dalen Wright playing 38. Like to me, it really doesn't matter that, you know, that stuff doesn't really matter, but it's more so, I think the way I'm looking at this, 10 different guys caught a pass. Again, I don't want to overanalyze this. New Mexico State's horrible. Minnesota's obviously a much better team, but it's just Tanner looking comfortable. I mean, you saw spots where Minnesota wanted to pass. I mean, they had a second and 26 and they ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive. Now, again, I'd argue that's what you should do against a New Mexico State. But what I want to ask Derek about is that offensive line, Derek. I mean, on the day, 57 rushing attempts that went for damn near 300 yards and over 5 yards of rushing attempt. Now, we know that Ibrahim and Potts are pretty good backs. But what were your first impressions? I guess first person I want to ask you about is Quinn Carroll. And I love the comparison that you made via text message to me. You can make it if you want.
Yep.
Here public. But what did you think about Quinn Carroll's first career start at right tackle?
Yeah, so some thoughts overall on the offensive line, but Quinn Carroll specifically, I thought that he's sharp mentally. He makes his reads quickly. He's a good drive blocker. He's a physical kid. What he has to work on is his foot speed, and I think that will come, but you could see in one-on-one pass pro situations, you know, he got caught a couple of times, and then sometimes with movement in the runs in the run game. So when the front is twisting or stunting on run blocking, he got crossed up a little bit. So that's something they're going to work with on him. And the analogy I made, Ryan, was looks to be similar to what we saw from Sam Schluter early in his career. He struggled a bit in those one-on-one pass pro situations, again with his footwork and foot speed, but we saw that with the right teaching and the right development, he was able to develop incredibly and had a great, you know, final season or two. So looks like he's developing, and that's the part of his game that I think is a little bit behind that you want to look for the coaches to work on with him.
And that's the thing I kind of noted in fall camp was pass pro is going to be the thing for Quinn Carroll. as Derek notes, and Derek said, obviously much smarter offensive line mind than I'll ever be. It's pass pro, and it's foot speed. And that's where, again, that's where I think maybe next year when Minnesota loses both their guards, maybe he slides in and becomes a guard. And I think he'd be a damn good guard if that's going to be the case. But it's going to be, if there's going to be one spot along this offensive line, I think that's going to have pass protection, it's going to be the right side. Now, you can say, well, I guess that's better, so Tanner can see it coming as a right-handed quarterback. But the other guy I want to ask you about was Ariante Ursery. Now, this is our first time having you on the podcast since we did the NIL episode, but it's more so the amount of praise that PJ Fleck has given Ariante Ursery in terms of a ceiling, Derek, to give you some context here, is he thinks he's got like top 100 pick ceiling. And it was his first career start at left tackle. Now, he obviously played in that 2020 game, but you could see on some of these plays, Derek, his athletic ability at left tackle, to me, is it like anything is – he's the best left tackle prospect I've seen wear a Gopher uniform in my 12 years on the beat. Now, you've obviously been a part of this program and been following this program longer than I have, but what were your first impressions against it of Ariante Ursery?
Very high ceiling. He's a guy that does, his athleticism jumps out to you. His footwork is very good, and that, you know, goes hand in hand with athleticism in this case. I was positively surprised by his physicality and his drive blocking, again, with the caveat that it's a New Mexico State team, and you know, we're going to need to see that throughout the Big Ten season. But my heart goes out to the right side of the New Mexico State defensive line, because between
Brevinspan Ford and Ariante Ursery, like if you go back and watch Mo's first touchdown, Brevin and Ariante absolutely eviscerate the right side of that right.
and really throughout the game. I mean, they really kind of pounded that side of the line into dust by the end of the game. And again, it'll be a long film session for those folks, you know, on the right side of that defensive line. But Ariante looked good in pretty much all phases. I will say, I think he got a little bit winded, and now these type of games are tough because you mentioned the play count, Ryan, and particularly when you look at the run pass mix. I've been there as an offensive lineman. It takes a lot out of you. Your legs tend to go in the second half after that much zone blocking. So you could see that a little bit with Ariante, but I would also give him a little bit of credit in that he's got a good motor. He gave a lot of effort, which I think ended up contributing to his being a little bit winded in the second half. So really, you know, I have to agree with Coach Fleck. The athleticism jumps out, the size, he's a tall kid, which also in an odd way, I think there were times it was difficult for him because some of the opponents in this game were so much smaller. He's having to bend quite a bit where, you know, when you're going against Iowa and Wisconsin and those Big Ten West opponents, it's going to be physically a little bit more even matchup. So very high ceiling. And I would say overall, the offensive line, the athleticism of this line has the potential to be higher than last year. I know a lot of experience on the line last year. Don't want to take anything away from them. But the athleticism here is high.
To know why, because that is a lofty statement considering the amount of experience and how good that offensive line was last year. So I'd be curious to know why you would say the ceiling is higher. Is it just because of the athleticism, or why would you say that?
Yeah, if you look at the athleticism, it won't just be clear what I said. The athleticism, I think, has a potential to be higher than last year's team. And if you're a fan and you're looking at things going forward, look at the way that they're handling movement from the defensive line in both pass pro and the run game, particularly in some of these early non-conference games. As we've pointed out before, the script tends to be they're not going to play you head up. You know, when next week's game, for example, I can guarantee the opponent is not going to line up head up and try to take on that offensive line. They're going to stunt. They're going to twist. They're going to run blitz. They're going to bring, you know, an extra defender in the box. So we've seen, Ryan, you know, despite how well again, I want to be, I don't want to be too damning to the previous offensive lines.
Sure.
Despite how well they did perform and the accolades they received, and they're all deserved, they did struggle at times with movement, with stunts and twists and movement out of maybe quicker, more undersized, you know, front sevens. And I think that has the potential to be better with this offensive line because of their athleticism.
I'm kind of, I wasn't expecting you to say that. So can I digest that for just like a minute?
While Luke digests that, I think the other thing to your point, Derek, is, you know, while the defense, and we'll get to them in a second, was able to essentially rest, they only were on the field 33 snaps. I mentioned it earlier. The offense was on there for 82. They got their conditioning in.
Yeah.
Minnesota on the day, 11 of 14 on third down. They had 44 minutes of time of possession. I mean, the offense got their work in, and I was pleasantly surprised. Well, here's what I'll say is, in that third quarter, I know I was getting a lot of tweets and people on Gopher Illustrated asking, why are the starters still in? And it was funny because I had a couple of I guess they're not former collegiate coaches, but they're current Division I coaches elsewhere, text and say, they have PJ's got to leave these guys in because they got to get work. Yes, the opponent's bad.
Yeah.
And but PJ's got to leave in this first unit just to have them get reps here through the three quarters. And then, yeah, pull them in the fourth. And to be fair, that's what PJ did, is those final two series of the fourth quarter. You saw Cole Kramer come in with the twos. You also saw Ethan Calliope-Manis come in. And that's where Fleck said, you know, pre-New Mexico State that they would rotate quarterbacks. And to be fair, they did. And again, you saw a lot of different bodies up there, but I had no qualms. Now, I understand the Axel Rushmeyer thing got people in a tizzy, and there was no update after the game. I would tell you that Axel was still on the sidelines, just walking around gingerly. My guess is you don't see him next week against Western Illinois. There's no reason you need to push that. But I had no qualms with the way Fleck handled that. It's the first game. Guys need reps. And in the fourth quarter, the only two drives, the twos were in there. Did anybody else have any different thoughts or feelings there?
No, I think saying that, you know, they need to get reps together, that's true. And that's part of what the non-conference is for. So I didn't have any issue. Derek?
Yeah, I thought it was right about the time that they made some changes. I think the timing was good. In fact, I turned to the person next to me on Trey Potts' last run and said, I hope they get him out of there. And literally the very next play, Bryce Williams is in the game. So it was right on the, and we know Coach Fleck doesn't, his mentality is there are no mop up reps. It's every rep counts. And so I think you're spot on, Ryan. They want to get these guys experience and get them some reps. And the offensive line, they'll get their legs back underneath them. If they accomplish what they want to this year, they're going to be running the ball a lot. They are going to be possessing the ball a lot. So they have to get in condition for that.
Well, here's the thing I would note is I'm going to have you two guess. Out of the 82 snaps Minnesota played offensively yesterday, how many snaps do you think Mo Ibrahim was on the field for?
23.
I'll say 32. I'll do the inverse of that.
I hate how Derek's right. It's 31. He was literally on the field for like 38% of snaps. Now, when he was on the field, he was getting touches, but it's not like Mo got a ton of run. Now, again, snaps versus actual carries, we can have the argument, but I think the way it was handled, I don't think I would have Fleck do it any differently. Luke, do you have any more offensive things you want to touch on?
No, I think the last thing, which will be a good segue to defense, is just the time of possession that they are able to keep. I know you mentioned the third down efficiency, but that was a testament to the offense and their ability to execute and, you know, one, stay on schedule. And that's just a kudos to the offense. And they need some praise for that. So kudos to them. Once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Again, if you want to be able to support Gopher football, the best way that you can do that is to be a member of the Goal Line Club. So go to their website today at goalineclub.org.
Or they just introduced a new benefit. For those of you that are stopping by the Alumni Association Sky U Mania little pop-up, It is 20% off all purchases made at that little pop-up market before any game this season. Just identify yourself as a Goal Line Club member, and this discount will be added to your order, which is a fantastic benefit. And as we've already mentioned before on many numerous podcasts, 100% of your GLC membership goes directly to the Gopher football program. To me, if you want to make sure your money's directly going to support PJ Fleck and his staff, that is an outstanding benefit. So if you want to learn more and become a member today, go to goallineclub.org.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of defense here. Some numbers that really stick out. 0 points, number one. That's
first a first shutout at home to start a season since 2006.
Yeah, that is a very big one. The other one, total yards under 100 yards. I don't know the last time I can remember watching a college football game where, one, there are 0 points and then under 100 yards. And then, two, the third one that kind of sticks out to me is one takeaway, Ryan. That was something that you stressed that Joe Rossi wanted to see more of this year. And it's pretty hard when the total number of plays or the total amount of time they're on the field is 15 minutes to force a lot of turnovers. But, yeah, I mean, they were able to force one, a great play by Terrell Smith to break on the ball and execute the pick. But, yeah, those are the three numbers that really stick out to me from this Gopher defense.
Well, I wish Justin Wally would have hung on.
Oh yeah, that too.
First pass attempt of the game went right through his hands, hit him in the chest, and went right to his knees. Because the final pass attempt of the game was the star of camp, Terrell Smith, getting his head around, making a fantastic diving play. But it's just, I'm sure Joe Rossi today is happy that obviously he had a shutout. But I think the thing to note is, I bet you he wishes he could have got his guys more snaps because they wanted to rotate a ton, and they did. I mean, they played 28 players on defense last night. But they only had – there were 35 total defensive snaps, folks. 35. Like, I would tell you in a normal game, I would say 60 to 65 plays for both offenses is probably right. 35. I mean, that's how atrocious New Mexico State's offense was. And I was actually telling Derek this, and I was telling this to like Daniel House in the press box, is it felt like as I was watching it live that the New Mexico State offensive coordinator gave up after the second series. He totally just, he did. It was more so, we're not even going to try to score at this point. We're just going to try to get out of here healthy. And that stopped until they got a couple of pass interference calls late. And then Terrell Smith was able to get that interception. But it was just, if I was the New Mexico State offense, here's the way I'll put it. I would be asking my offensive coordinator for what we did in the second and third quarters, which was essentially run up the middle to get nothing. And then whether it was Frakes or Diego Pavia, have them be sacrificial lambs to get absolutely smoked. Were you really trying to have us score? Were you really trying to have us work on whatever our offense is going to be? Because, Derek, they just threw in the towel. Now, that's a credit, I guess, to what Minnesota was able to do on those first two series. But I would love to know what the plan was for New Mexico State in the second and third quarters, because they weren't trying to do anything.
Well, we often lamented when Jerry Kill was coaching at Minnesota the risk-averse nature of the offense. And I had a chance actually last week to look at the New Mexico State game against Nevada. And I'll just tell you that not much has changed. Jerry Kill's team in that game and a bit in this game was they're physical. They're disciplined for the most part, but they just don't take many risks. Their passing tends to be, although they'll throw it downfield against single coverage every now and then, they tend to try and spread the field, throw to the sidelines, get guys in space, and try not to turn the ball over. And I think that's what you're seeing, Ryan, is, you know, after the first couple of drives, when you get down, you have a choice as a coaching staff. You really can choose, okay, we're down a couple scores early, we're down three scores early, we're going to have to open things up, we're going to have to take risks, we're going to have to get the ball downfield, try to manufacture some big plays, or we're going to just put the coat of armor on and take some bullets and hunker down. And that's what they chose to do up until early in the fourth quarter when they did they had one drive where they decided to take some shots, but by and large they didn't do that. They stayed pretty risk averse, and it was just, frankly, if I'm being honest, it was a tough game to evaluate the defense because, as you guys have touched on, they just weren't out there much. There weren't many plays, and the plays there were pretty conservative.
Okay, so
it is a Fury kill passing game of 4 of 12 for 53 yards and an interception. Ring any bells?
No.
It rotating doesn't. Quarterbacks.
The rotating quarterback thing did
one, and one being a more statuesque one. I feel like the year is 2012 and nothing has changed when I watch a Jerry Kill offense.
Were you surprised that Pavia started? I mean, it was.
Yes.
I was very surprised.
I was shocked because people, when we saw him against Nevada, he had 4 turnovers in like the first 25 snaps. My guess is they were like, well, we can either throw the true freshman, which was number 9, Frakes, to the Wolves against a Big Ten school and have him get David Card. But I mean, Pavia on like those first like 7 plays of the game, he took some shots, man. Like he took 4 big hits in like 7 plays. And I was like, what? This guy has no regard for his body, or he just is like, well, I'm going to lay it all out, which I can appreciate. But like, it was a decision, Luke. I don't know if it was just, again, trying to get out of there healthy, but I wish we would have had more of a better sample size, or maybe a bigger sample size, a better sample size to kind of evaluate the defense. Because again, there were a lot of new bodies up front. You got to see Kyler Baugh start alongside Trill Carter. You got to see some Jalen Logan Redding. But the other funny thing is, like, you look at the snap counts, gentlemen, like defensive line wise, Thomas Rush led the defensive ends with 19 snaps played. Trill Carter led the defensive tackles with 18 snaps. Like, these guys didn't even get to play because New Mexico State was so bad and Minnesota was so good at getting off the field. That's where, again, Minnesota was able to, I guess New Mexico State was 2 of 9 on third down. It was just, I don't know what you say here other than they're really bad. Minnesota looks like a Joe Rossi defense. Now, it's not going to look, I don't think, much different next week when Western Illinois comes to town. It's going to be another 2 quarterback thing. Western Illinois just lost by 20 to one of Derek's favorite teams to follow, the UT Martin team. It's just, I don't know what else you really say. I don't want to overanalyze or underanalyze, but I think the sweet spot is they looked like they were supposed to look, I guess.
Yeah, and that's encouraging. I do have one question for both of you guys. As I watched this game, and again, I wasn't in person, I was watching on TV, but I felt like this Gopher defense maybe looked faster than last year, but it could be just the competition they were playing against. Did you guys get a sense of that at all? And it's hard to draw a conclusion, one on the sample size and the relative opponent, but did it feel like they maybe seemed faster?
I thought they played pretty fast, but I don't want to take too much away from them, but the plays were pretty vanilla. Yes. You know,
but it's if also you're like New Mexico State's athletes compared to like their skill positions compared to Minnesota's skill positions, it's tough to know. It's going to be tough to know next week against Western Illinois, and it's probably going to be a little tough to know against Colorado. It's where you're going to find out in late September. I mean, I wish they would have thrown it like Ryan Stapp, and we would have been able to see what that looks like. I just felt like we didn't learn a whole lot other than collectively as a unit, they're pretty good. But like compared to what, to Luke's point?
Yeah, if they're playing fast, that means they're getting their pre-snap reads and they're post-snap able to diagnose the plays quickly, which again, as we're saying, could be mainly a symptom of play selection and speed on the offense they're facing. But something to watch that I thought was, I picked up a little bit on, and again, you're trying to draw a lot from a little here, but Minnesota still continues to play with their defensive ends in such a way that they're not getting upfield and they're not playing really wide to set an edge. So they do get upfield, but they tend to spill things. So that leaves things like quarterback bootlegs and, you know, some flood patterns and things to the outside open. And when you play that way, you either have to have a force player on defense from the outside making the tackle, so a cornerback or a strong safety. And I know Flip Dixon fits that role perfectly, but if it happens to the other side, you're relying on the speed of the inside linebackers to get out and play the edge. So something to look at is when you're, you know, when the Gophers take on a team like Illinois, for example, or another team that likes to run and play things horizontally, you're going to need a lot of team speed from the inside out. And Ryan, I don't know, you know, you go deep on the personnel, so you could speak to this better than me, but it will be interesting to see what they have in the linebacker position from a speed perspective, not just straight line speed, but being able to read, diagnose, and react quickly. Because if you have to come from inside the hash and make a tackle on the sideline in the matter of a couple seconds, you've got to have that. You've got to be dialed in on the inside.
You do. And that's where I think we're going to find out more when that happens from guys like Braylon Oliver and Cody Lindenberg, who both were out there last night. So I wish we had more to talk about with the defense. They're good. How good? We'll find out in Michigan State. Maybe we'll find out more when Colorado comes to town. They are a Power 5 team. But that's a Mike Sanford offense, but that's kind of here nor there.
Oh, the shade.
Oof, the shade being thrown. So, again, defensively, you can't really ask for more, though. The under 100 total yards, 0 points allowed, had a turnover, should have had two. Mm-hmm. But, again, 33, 35 plays against you. That's where I have no issues if that's the same recipe next week when Western Illinois comes to town, where – maybe you leave some of those guys out there a little. Like Mariano played deep in the fourth quarter. So did some of these guys, like Tyler Newbin and Jordan Howden. They need some reps, folks. Like they need to be ready to go when it's gonna hit the fan against East Lansing here in a couple weeks. So I have no qualms with them continuing to leave defensive guys out because they need reps.
Yeah, drawing a lot from a little. I don't know how he looked in camp, Ryan, but I thought Devon Eastern looked pretty physical, a little bit raw. Probably needs to develop and hone in a little bit, but he was someone that stood out to me on a few limited snaps that he got. And overall, the offensive line, again, considering who the opponent was, looked very physical. And to Luke's point, played pretty fast.
I wouldn't know Gage Keys. Like when I was doing my GIF rewind, that's up on Gopher Illustrated. I was looking at the Thomas Rush sack, and if you watch that play, Gage Keys is being triple teamed, and he's still 4 or 5 yards into the backfield getting penetration in the face of the quarterback there. Like, that's effort for a guy in his third year. And so that's where they're going to need some pass rushers on the inside. And if Gage Keys can provide something, and you mentioned Devon Eastern getting in there, and the funniest part about that is, Derek, you want to guess how many snaps those two guys played?
Not a handful, probably 4, 5, 6, something like that.
Like Gage Keys played 8 snaps. Devon Eastern played 9 because they rotated so many of these guys through. It was just like these guys need more reps. Like the Kyler Baughs and the Devon Easterns and the Gage Keyses of the world, they need reps. But it's tough to get reps when your defense is it's a fantastic problem to have, folks. But it's just like it's a small problem. I mean, I love that we're discussing this, but I would love to see, 20, 25 snaps from Devon Eastern and Gage Keys against Western Illinois.
One last one. Danny Strigal got his first sack. And that play, I'm blanking on the defensive line combination, but I thought it was interesting because he got basically he swung around and got his sack. I was impressed with the speed, but I remember thinking like, boy, that's an interesting D-line combination. I'm sorry I didn't write it down. But yeah, I loved that he was able to break down and make that play, with pace behind him as well. He was someone that I was kind of excited about and just one flash play on that sack.
Well, I would also note Austin Booker did not play in the game.
True.
He suffered a hand injury here in the last week or so. He sounds like he's going to be week to week. You saw his hand in a cast. I think it sounds like it's going to be more of a pain tolerance type of thing. So I hope that he's back sooner than later because, again, from the flashes we saw in the spring game, flashes we saw in fall camp, I think he can definitely help out there too. But Danny Strigal is going to do – I mean, with no Booker there, you're going to see a lot of Danny Strigal spelling Thomas Rush, and I'm intrigued to see what the former state champion wrestler can provide.
Once again, Life and Legacy Law Firm in Illinois supports Gopher Gridiron Radio. So if you're in the state of Illinois, reach out to them if you need help with you know, real estate, maybe it's estate planning, maybe it's even business planning. Ryan, we both know, we both are starting to add more and more dependencies in our lives, that estate planning is probably one of the more important things you can have in place, especially you that will be getting married here soon.
Oh, if I've learned anything, it's you need to have your stuff together. And if you don't have a will, and especially if you have children, if you have a house, if you have a car, if you have anything that you want to make sure it gets bestowed to whomever you want it to go through, you need a damn will. Okay? I'll be the one to tell you, get your stuff together. And if you're in Illinois, we have some fantastic people for you to go work with, Luke.
Again, reach out to them at legacyandlifelaw.com. Again, legacyandlifelaw.com. All right. Before we transition, talk a little bit about the coaching or the Big Ten games that we've been able to see thus far. We did record this earlier than normal because of the Thursday game and the fact that we wanted to get this out as people travel for the Labor Day weekend, if they're going to travel. I did want to touch briefly on special teams. Dragan Kesic did Dragan Kesic. I thought that was very impressive. Brady Weeks did Brady Weeks. Some good snaps. One punt, I think, from Mark Crawford inside the 20, Ryan.
Inside the 10. Or,
there you go. Good.
Again, I will, hey, 10. Look, new year, new me. I will be as fair as I've ever been to special teams.
And then from a field goal perspective, Matthew Trickett, I think, nailed the only field goal he took and hit all of his extra points, if memory serves. So all in all, a good outing by the unit. The one thing I did want to make sure we talked briefly about was punt return. They did field the number of punt returns, I believe, all fair catch except for the one that was absolutely shanked. But, you know, the best thing you can do is not fumble a punt. But we would like to see some activity on those punt returns. Any comments from you guys on special teams?
In the return game, it was still punt safe. Yes. I don't know if we're going to see that change. And then the one kickoff return was, I'd like to see something different. I'll put it that way.
That I want people to know diplomatic. That was the other Burns, not Ryan Burns, making that comment. I think the only thing I really gleaned from special teams yesterday was that Coleman Bryson, true freshman safety, was on a couple different special teams. So it looks like they're okay with burning his red shirt.
It's still four. It's four games, right, to burn your red shirt?
Correct. Okay. So we'll see if he's still there in October. I could have swore that the two punt gunners, by the way, were Chris Ottman Bell and Lamecki Brockington, which two receivers, I guess, again, you're playing just a game of pitch and catch when Mark Crawford's punting. It's 41 yards and a cloud of dust or something less than that. So we'll see if that changes. The funniest part for Derek would be, so 81 is Quentin Redding's new number. He had been something different here in the spring and the fall. And the first punt return, the poor guy in the press box who's on the mic goes, Brock Anixted is back, because that was Brock Anixted's number. And Quentin Redding just did Brock Anixted things more or less in terms of fair catch everyone. Now, I don't have a qualm with that. I mean, yesterday, I don't know that there was one I would want him to return. They all were just right. Kind of.
Yeah, that's like, that's a good point.
Now, I thought the interesting thing was the two kick returners were Q Redding and Clay Geary. It's, you know, Redding is your only big play chance there. Peace and love to the Lakeville seventh year guy. But I would love to see maybe someone more dynamic back there. But
sure.
On the only kick return, I think he brought it out to the 23, so they lost 2 yards of field position compared to just fair catching it. But I don't know if there's also a ton more to glean, is they only punted once.
Right.
You know, the guy didn't return it. So we will continue to learn more. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that as much as things change, they still stay the same.
Yeah. And you know, the way that we've often looked at special teams is special teams can be a weapon, or you play it about as vanilla as possible and just try not to let it hurt you. I think the Gophers will tend to still be the latter and not really use it as a weapon per se, much like Iowa or even Illinois to a better extent. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops over time. Again, As always, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to help support Gopher Gridiron Radio. And Ryan, I know that Bill Burns likes to shop. Tell me how he's going to shop for his customers.
Yeah, and that's where, again, insurance, it's not the funnest thing to talk about in the world. It's the thing all of us pay for every single month, and you just think that it's being wasted. Well, if you want to make sure you're getting the best coverage for the best price, that's where the Burns Insurance Agency can help you, whether it's your home, commercial business, your auto. If you think you're paying too much and you want a Gopher fan to make sure that as an independent insurance agent, he can check it against 20 different companies, reach out to insurancebyburns.com. Again, he is my agent. I just saved over $300 on my home insurance. And you know what I did to do that? Just be a customer. I did absolutely nothing. Every single year, they go through your policies, make sure you're getting the best coverage for the best price. I got to save $300, Luke, and I did nothing to deserve that. So if you want to have the Burns Insurance Agency take a look and see if your home, your auto, your commercial business is paying too much, give them a shout. Check them out at insurancebyburns.com.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about games in the Big Ten. I think, Ryan, we maybe talked about the Nebraska game a little bit, the one in Ireland with Northwestern.
I know Derek's got some thoughts and feelings, and anytime we can talk about them Huskers,
we will definitely do that. So we'll do that. This is a game that, you know, the Fighting Scott Frost lost once again. The formula was pretty much followed to a T. You know, have a lead, blow it, have a lead, blow it. And in the end, you know, they did something that you kind of leave yourself scratching your head. Like, why did they onside kick up, I believe, 11 or something? I don't remember off the top of my head. So, Derek, just want to get kind of your download and perception off that game.
Yeah, I did have a couple thoughts. One certainly very unoriginal thought is Pat Fitzgerald continues to make good decisions. I really think in this game, they played it pretty close to the vest for most of the game. Now, skeptics might say they waited around for Nebraska to make a mistake or a coaching mistake, and maybe that was the strategy, maybe it wasn't. But you saw that when they needed it, particularly in the second half, all of a sudden Nebraska starts dialing up pressures. They'd four-man rush the whole entire game. And then all of a sudden in the second half, they start bringing in pressures and they get to the quarterback. I mean, just the timing of it and from a coaching perspective just continues to be really good from Northwestern's part. Now, the other thing that I noticed, which I wanted to mention, and it's just not a good look for Nebraska besides, you know, not winning the game, is the comments that were made during the week about how hard the players were conditioning and et cetera. And what jumped out to me is that the Nebraska defense got completely gassed in the game. I don't know if they weren't rotating enough guys or if they weren't in shape or what the situation was, but that became very clear to me. Guys with their hands on their hips, bent over, and it was really a game of attrition for the Northwestern offense. And with Evan Hall, who looked really, really good, they ended up, you know, at first half just didn't have much room, weren't moving the ball much. But as the game went on and the Nebraska defense got tired, all of a sudden the Northwestern offensive line looked better and better. The holes opened up. They started moving the ball. And as you mentioned, Luke, I think Nebraska had an 11-point lead twice and gave it up both times. So that was not a good look in light of the comments earlier in the week to have, you know, your team then kick it off in the game and be the one that's out of shape.
Yeah, definitely. And then we talked maybe a little bit of Illinois, Wyoming. Wyoming wasn't probably a terribly great foe, but I was pretty encouraged with what I saw from Illinois. You know, they might not be the deepest team. It's
mind-boggling to me that they are road dogs against...
Again. Yeah.
And Derek, you brought this up to Luke and I, and I think it's worth discussing, and I think you're probably right. I think the Big Ten East has the two best teams in Ohio State and Michigan, but I also think they have the two worst teams in the Big Ten in Indiana and Rutgers. So the fact that Illinois, off a 30-point win over Wyoming, is a road dog against Indiana, who hasn't won a conference game in God knows when. Maybe by the time this podcast you're listening to it, Indiana boat races Illinois somehow. And we all look like idiots, but on paper, this Indiana being a favorite in this game, to me, makes no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was interesting in the Illinois game, and we'll see how they play it as the season goes on, but Definitely gone are the days of Brett Bielema with the two tight ends, the fullback. I mean, that they were about as the opposite of that as you can be, and good for them because the talent they have at running back, they found a way to take advantage of that against Wyoming. But just game plan wise, they were as spread out as, you know, get the offensive ball carrier in space. I mean, that was their strategy. And again, this is coming from a guy where, again, Brett Bielema made his career on packing it in, running the ball in between the tackles, and, you know, recruited to that philosophy. And he seems to, with a new offensive coordinator, have let that go. And that's going to be a different challenge for teams when they face him in the Big Ten West.
All right, let's transition, talk a little bit about the other game that happened on Thursday evening. Penn State ended up beating Purdue at Purdue 35-31.
It was the most Sean Clifford of Sean Clifford game.
I don't know how else to put that. No, it was. Can we also just say that if you're a game theory person when it comes to the sport of football, you watch the last, I don't know, 6 minutes, and you might find yourself scratching your head. Because at one point, Purdue has the ball, first and 10 on Purdue's 41 with 2 minutes and 56 seconds. King Doru runs for 4 yards to the Purdue 45. They have according to ESPN, they have an 87.1% chance of winning. Their next play is an Aiden O'Connell incomplete pass. The next play is another Aiden O'Connell incomplete pass on 3rd and 6, and then they punt. This was with 2 minutes and 22 seconds left. Sean Clifford gets the ball back, and they're able to march down and score a touchdown. But yes, Ryan, to your point, holy cats, this was Aiden O'Connell roller coaster, or not Aiden O'Connell, sorry, Sean Clifford roller coaster up and down.
Well, that's where I saw a tweet from Chris Hummer, who's a great follow for 24/7 type of people. You know, his tweet was, Sean Clifford is such a college quarterback. He's not terrible, but he's not great, and he's frustrating for his fan base, but then he also has so many moments like that drive. And that's where it's like, he's good enough to not let maybe a more talented backup come in, but Clifford's not good enough to actually win anything significant. Like, it was just like he throws that pick six, or I should call it the puke six, if we're going to be honest here. But then he leads that drive back in the fourth quarter. But then, to Luke's point, the final 14 plays for Purdue, as they held a lead for, I think, a large majority of it, like the final 14 plays before they lost the lead, they ran the ball like once. Like, I understand that Jeff Brom offense is allergic to running the football. That's why Aiden O'Connell threw it 58 times on the night. But it's just like Jeff Brom just can't get out of his own way at times. So, I had it up in the press box while the game was going, and it's just like, you know, Charlie Jones, the Iowa transfer, the punt return extraordinaire, looks like he's going to be the alpha for that offense, which is going to be interesting to see what it looks like in a month when the Purdue comes to Huntington Bank Stadium. Charlie Jones has 12 catches, 153 yards and a touchdown. But it's just like, I think of Derek's voice in the back of my head where it's like, everybody keeps trying to proclaim that Purdue's going to take the next step or Nebraska's going to take the next step. And then they forget, like, their head coaches are still Scott Frost, and their head coaches are still Jeff Brom. And it's like they're good enough, but they just don't – I don't know. Like, that game was incredibly winnable at home for Purdue, and they found a way to lose it.
Well, and that was a big one for Purdue because they had gotten some late steam, I think, here heading into the season. And I think a large part of that was their schedule. You know, I believe, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, they miss Michigan and Ohio State in the crossovers, and they got Penn State at home.
Yeah, like, so their next three games before they come to Minneapolis, they're playing Indiana State, who's a terrible Missouri Valley team. They're on the road at Syracuse, who's a terrible ACC team, and then they host FAU. Like, we're not going to learn anything more about Purdue in terms of where they're at until they come to Minnesota. But that was the game they needed to win. You get Penn State at home to start the season. That was a game you needed to win, in my opinion, if you were going to be a West contender. But I guess we'll find out more.
Here's the thing that at least stuck out to me. One, Penn State continues to not really be able to run the ball. They had 32 carries.
Neither team can run the ball.
And at the end of the day, like, I understand that for certain teams, that's not your identity, but at a certain point you have to be able to run the ball to finish out games. Not so much that's the only way you're going to score, but so that you can manage the clock in certain situations. It's more situational football than it is identity, right?
Well, and that's just wild to me, because for Penn State, that's not a purposeful decision. They'd love to run the ball if they could run the ball. You know, Purdue, it's a decision, but with Penn State, it's crazy to me the way the success they have recruiting. You know, Ryan has pointed out before with a team like Penn State, and many times they're selecting, not recruiting. Right. And boy, I can't believe that they can't put together more talent on the offensive line to be able to run the ball. They certainly have it in the backfield, and they always have big play receivers, etc. So that's a head scratcher. It was last year, and like,
can find an offensive line that can move anybody, which is fascinating to me, because mm-hmm. Penn State gets all these four-star offensive linemen, yet they don't have anybody that can move anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we'll see both of these teams in October, and we'll see what they're like then. But it is truly fascinating, because I don't know. Like, I talked about it on KFan on Thursday. This was the game between two teams. Like, are they contenders or pretenders? And I would say Purdue's a pretender. And it's like, is Penn State actually a contender? Is that what we learned out of this?
I don't know.
I don't know if that's what we learned out of this.
Can you think of when was the last time Penn State legitimately had a running force? Like, that was something you feared.
Saquon Barkley?
No, I think it was, yeah. I think it was Brown after him, that 2019 year. He was pretty good, but yeah, it might have been Saquon Barkley. I mean, they've really lacked a running identity for a while.
Yeah, Jordan Brown in that 2019 season was averaging dang near 7 yards a carry. Noah Kane was over 5 yards a carry. I mean, but the last 2 years, and it probably played a big part in why Penn State is now, or and before that game, they were 11-11 in their last 22 games.
What's a huge part? That might be the only reason. I mean, they're talented everywhere else, but you're right, Ryan. If they want to be in the conversation with Michigan and Ohio State, which is where they want to be, they absolutely will not be there until they develop an offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Because somehow, you know what the funniest part is that 2019 game where Penn State was undefeated and Minnesota had like one loss. It's going to be the same two quarterbacks 4 years later, when that whiteout game comes. Because as long as Tanner Morgan's been at Minnesota, I think Penn State fans would tell you, how is Sean Clifford still there?
Do you think that Tanner Morgan's going to stand in the tunnel and yell something like, they all effing came to watch us, not them? Because that's all I remember from Sean Clifford.
Yeah, I can't see a married man like Tanner Morgan doing that.
All right. We got some late breaking news here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast, Ryan. If I'm doing my producing job anywhere near as well as I should be, some breaking news here that there will be a 12-team playoff in the college football playoffs. Yes.
So from what the national reporters have said, and this broke here just in the last few minutes as we were recording, sounds like the earliest this would be implemented, gentlemen, is potentially like 2025, probably not until 2026. So we're still going to see another few years of just the four. But I am all for going to 12, you know, especially for like a school like Minnesota. Even if they just sneak in at 10, 11, or 12 on a ceiling season, I think that would mean a ton to all those fan bases.
Oh, now, for sure.
Is there like a likelihood that they get blown out of the water like we've seen so many college football playoff semifinals before? Sure, but at least you're there. Like, at least you think that there can be more what's the word I'm looking for here? It's escaping me off the top of my head, but there can be more, you know, variance finally in college football, which, again, maybe there's not, because you're saying, well, Minnesota's going to lose by 700 to Alabama anyway. Maybe you're right. But at least there's some new faces in there potentially.
So here's what I'll say. It's interesting to see the timing of when this will actually come down. Right now, you're right, it's looking like it might be 2025. This aligns pretty interestingly with the expansion of the Big Ten, so let's keep an eye on that. Probably more to come there. The other thing that I will say is the Gophers were a top 10 team, or top 15 team in 2019. So you can't tell me that there isn't a chance they can get into this, whatever they're going to call it, bowl playoff system or whatever they're going to call it. You know, maybe they'll go bowl championship series again, because I think that would be funny. But it'll be interesting to see how this playoff ends up working out. And I do think that, you know, the chances of the Gophers getting in obviously goes up when there's 12-4. Derek, as a player, as a former player, what are your thoughts on the expanded playoff?
Well, you know, there was a time, I like the tradition of college football. There was a time that I think I resisted a lot of the change, you know, going to a playoff system to begin with, and then expansion, et cetera. And I've come around on it. I mean, I think it has the potential to enhance the regular season. You know, that's one thing you worry about is adding in more postseason games. Is that going to dilute the regular season? I can definitely probably now say that that's not the case. In fact, has a chance to enhance. But I think the key here is what Ryan touched on, which is, despite if what people maybe want to admit, it's been the same handful of teams that have played in the college football playoff. I mean, you just look up the stats, and it's like, the you know, six teams have had 90% of the spots in the playoff. So although ratings keep going up, that isn't really good for college football. Ultimately, you have teams at the very top stacking talent. Now, they still may do that. We don't know. But the idea how this potentially could affect recruiting is, if you're able to tell, you know, a young man that now there are more teams that you can attend, more schools you can attend and have a chance to still be in the playoff, mix things up. I think college football needs to continue to have an eye on parity in some way, shape, or form, because it's healthy for the game and the fan viewership.
All right. Any final parting thoughts on the expansion of the college playoff or really, I guess, upcoming Big Ten games too? Otherwise, we'll probably shut this thing down and let people, you know, get off their lawnmowers or stop pushing their lawnmowers or...
Or get out of the car after driving your family on.
Yeah, if you're the person sitting there, if you're the person that's been sitting in the car for the last 10, 15 minutes, go have fun. You could have paused this and come back later.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a whole lot else. I don't know that we're going to learn a ton from the Western Illinois. I hope that we don't have to. I hope it's another blowout like we saw on Thursday night, on Saturday at 11 a.m., because Western Illinois can't say is going to be any better than New Mexico State. But if I'm confident in anything, Luke, it's that whatever that over-under is, I'm pounding the under.
All right.
Yeah, I would just wanted to add, I had a chance to go to the game on Thursday, and in addition to the student section being amazing yet again, very fun atmosphere. You know, I think, I'll just speak for myself, what I've really wanted for the University of Minnesota football program is to have an atmosphere and a program where the opponent isn't necessarily dictating everything about the fan experience. And I think that's what we saw on Thursday, because fun atmosphere, a lot of tailgating going on, great student section, kind of a raucous crowd. And it was New Mexico State, you know, an opponent that was a huge underdog to the Gophers. So that was fun to see, and hope that continues.
Yeah, those are really good points. The student section came out in force, and I know it's the first week of school and whatnot, and things can change.
It's orientation week, and a lot of those were freshmen, but I will continue to say, for a place like Minnesota, the student section, there is no more valuable fan than the students. Mm-hmm. They drive the energy and enthusiasm, and as long as they continue to show up, which they certainly have the last few seasons, I think everyone's going to have a much more enjoyable experience in Huntington Bank Stadium.
All right. So once again, we want to thank you all for listening. This is it's really fun to have these conversations and get your guys' feedback, whether that's on Twitter or GI or whatever. Make sure that you interact with our sponsors and support them, the Goal Line Club, as well as Burns Insurance. And make sure too that you reach out to Derek and in his new venture at Dinky Town Athletes. More to come there. Keep your eye on social media as well. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.